Bobrovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC. Rarely wrong and always right. If you want to be on the program today, 800-222-KABC, 800-222-5222, or you may email me, sam@samnation.com. So yesterday I got a scoop. By the way, do you guys appreciate that I'm wearing a tie? I know this is radio, and I guess, you know, I could wear sweats, but I do dress up for you. And today, normally after work, I ditch the tie because I come, I roll into the undisclosed location studio, and I take the tie off, and it's part of the ritual of ending my work day and beginning my radio day. And today I didn't do it because I have a meeting afterwards. So I'm very presentable. I know you all noticed that. And I want to make a note of that. So speaking of being presentable from work and law school and legal work, I heard last night, I got the scoop that Whittier Law School is closing here in Orange County. This is actually a bigger deal than you might realize. It's unusual. It's really unusual for law schools to close. And that is because law schools actually are giant money-making, money-printing businesses if done right. I mean, you're guaranteed funds from the government. It's the biggest scam around. You know, when students cry and politicians and everybody whine about how expensive education is in America— the answer is the government's the problem. And government's the problem because government wanted to help. The way it works is this, right? You go to law school, you go to grad school, you go to undergrad. The government says, we will pay up to a certain amount for you and give you these really nice, easy loans. People with no credit, right? I mean, it's $40K a year for law school. It was when I went. It's probably more now. $40,000 a year. So that's times 3 years, $120K plus living expenses on top of that. Think about this. You know how hard it is to get a car loan? I mean, that's secured debt. This is unsecured. Here's money out of the sky. Well, it is. It's guaranteed by the federal government. So if the federal government comes in and they say, here, we'll give you up to $40K a year, I'm going to ask you a wild logics question. Think about it. Ready? Here we go. If the federal government promises a law school they will pay up to $40,000, how much is that law school going to charge? That's correct. They're going to charge $40,000. And why is that? Of course, they're going to take the full maximum. Some guy says, hey, I'm going to pay you up to $15 an hour. What are you going to ask for at the end of the day? Exactly. And so this is what, and so every time, in effect, schools in these type of educational institutions do not cater to the client, to the student. They cater to the government. They have to lobby the government. The government comes in and these loans gradually inch upwards and upwards and upwards. And education costs more and more because the government continuously raises the rates. And law schools, I don't know so much about other graduate programs, but I know law schools very well, having gone through the system. I don't know if you know this. I didn't go to law school as a kid. And when I say kid, I really do mean, I mean, I was in law school. There was somebody in my class who was, I think, 20 or 21. Yeah, I mean, somebody breezed through undergrad and went straight to law school. That's a kid, okay? I went to law school. I started law school and I was 29. So I was like the old man on campus. Forget big man on campus. I was the old man on campus. And so I was looking at it. I already had some life experience and obviously knew a little, you know, a little more about life than most, some of my classmates. But I remember going through it and questioned all of it, the whole thing. And I remember looking around at that. By the way, you start adding all this money up. It is an incredible amount of money. If you think about a class size that can be somewhere at least 250, 300 students, some schools a lot more than that, 600. Now, there are a few that are on scholarship and so forth and so on, but there, a chunk of those students are paying 40,000, 50,000 in some cases a year. And the worse the law school, typically, by the way, this is interesting. The worse the school, the fewer of their students that graduate, the fewer of their students that pass the bar. Typically, they actually charge more. And do you know why that is? That's right. They're always going to find somebody who wants to go to law school and dreams of becoming a lawyer and find it hard to get into other places. So the school that will let them in actually can charge them a ton of money. And Whittier had that reputation. It was the type of school that would bring in a ton of students every year, charge them the absolute maximum that they could get away with, under the student loan program. And the money just rolled in. But the problem is none of these people were graduating, were graduating and able to pass the bar exam. Because the standards were so low, they just brought students in that would pay the money. And so they ended up every year pumping out students that weren't getting jobs. Jobs. That's the critical thing here. Because back when the market crashed, this all fits sort of into our history, right? What's happened here. In 2007, when 2008, the market crashed, remember all that. A lot of people at that point, we were just talking about it before the show. If you were in college and it was 08, the job market sucked. It did. It was terrible. So what did you do? Did you go, I'm going to graduate and get a job? Or did you say, I'm going to graduate, get some extra schooling. I'm going to go to law school and hide out for 3 years. A lot of people did that. You know what else? There are a ton of people, when Lehman crashed, there are a lot of those financial services sector people who had been out for 3 years and maybe didn't have enough experience to get another job. Those people all went back and hit out in grad school. So there was an enormous influx of students around 2007, 2008, and even my year, 2009. I remember that. Lots and lots of people coming in who were looking to weather the storm. And the schools got fat and happy, especially schools like Whittier, who are mills, who are bringing in all these people who are just, paying to get in. And so what happened then? All of a sudden, the economy's sort of recovering. It was Obama, so it wasn't that great. We didn't have enough jobs, still don't have enough jobs. But you had all these lawyers being pumped out there into the marketplace. And jobs for lawyers, very regional. It's, it depends on the strength of the legal market in let's say, Orange County and L.A. County. I remember this because I was managing the firm. I was the chief operating officer. And one of my roles was hiring attorneys. And I remember... No, I distinctly remember this, that you could actually get lawyers for a lot less for a while. So where you could before you could hire people for 100, you'd have to pay them 80 to 100K. All of a sudden the price was dropping because there was an oversupply. And law schools didn't think about this because they were grabbing those federal dollars as fast as they could. And they were pumping out lawyers. And by the way, you're not really a lawyer. Going to law school is one thing, but you've got to pass the bar exam. That's the most important thing. You've got to pass the bar. If you don't pass the bar, you're not a lawyer. And I think Whittier's pass rate was like 30%, 35%. It's dismal. It's well below the state average. Oh, actually, I've got to look at this. 22%. I got 22%. Of its graduates passed the California bar exam last July. That's dismal. And so people aren't getting the full... you understand what happened here? So then the job market tanks. This is basic econ. You know, I know, by the way, our friends on the left, they never understand this stuff. Basic economics. If you have a product, the product is your law degree, your Whittier, and you put too much of that product out there and there's not enough takers for it, what happens? Well, the price of your product has to come down. But it doesn't because it's sponsored by the government. See this? This is why government doesn't belong in education. It doesn't belong in healthcare. It doesn't belong in anything having to do any remotely with the marketplace. Because the government, by promising to pay money on behalf of the student, creates a glut in the market. Because the student isn't the one making the financial decision of making the investment. Young people treat loans like funny money. Oh, the government's giving me a loan. Oh, that's great. I'll take it. Of course. It sounds great. I'll do it. Sweet. So that's how it happens. And they go to law school. And then the marketplace. And then, the big realization, you're out of law school. You've got the debt. And you can't get a job. And that happened for a few years. And you know what ended up happening is the fact that people weren't getting jobs made it less attractive. It wasn't the money. It became the fact that there wasn't a market for the jobs that made applicants more hesitant to go to law school. And when I know this because I went to Chapman, which is an excellent law school here, I think. And I love Chapman. And I'll tell you, I speaking to the dean there a few weeks back, and I was asking him about some of this stuff, and he said, it's actually very challenging right now for law schools because there are a lot fewer applicants applying. And right now their applications are coming in for next year. And so the law schools have to try really hard to get bodies into seats, especially when they were used to having quite a few bodies in years past. So if you've got a bad law school, it's not going to work out. And that is the backstory. I always try to hear, I only have an hour a night, so I can't explain everything to you. But this was a big news story. I was going to talk about it yesterday. There's so much going on. The announcement was made on Wednesday to the students and to the alumni. And because I have friends who are alumni, everybody started texting me that day and said, hey, it's ending. It's over. They told us they're closing the school. It was actually Whittier College that made the decision because Whittier College, the board of trustees are the ones that control the law school. And it just wasn't making sense for them financially. So they are going to be in existence for basically 2 years. They're going to wrap up the students that are already in the system. And then they're done. And this is a good thing. This is how the marketplace ought to work, right? If there are only so many students applying for law school, this particular school is not performing. It closes and those students that would have gone there get redistributed, right? Those customers go to other campuses. By the way, speaking of students, did you see this? A quarter of millennials living at home neither work nor study. This was in today's news. It caught my eye. It's all from the Census Bureau. Roughly one-third of all millennials live at home with their parents, and one-fourth of them can't even be bothered with enrolling in school or finding a job. If you listen to the program, you know that we have not a lot of love lost for millennials. And if you are a millennial that has a job and doesn't live at home, you probably have friends from high school that are in this predicament. And that's interesting because in my day, that's exactly why people went to grad school, right? That's why they went to law school I'm wrapping up my time in college and I need something to do. And it's not a respectable thing to live at home with mom and dad and not work. But apparently, 25% is a huge number. That's pretty big. All right, I want to do a little bit of soul searching here, which is what these millennials ought to be doing. I want to do a little soul searching for the Democrats. This is a little PSA from Sam Nation. because I sense that our friends on the left are wandering in the wilderness. And I'll tell you what I mean when we come back. All right. Stay tuned. More fun straight ahead.
Say, what is this?
You know what it is. 790,
790,
790. KABC. Hey, to all the millennials, the quarter of you that are living at home and don't work or study, I'll tell you, you should have grown up in my household. Sam Rejofsky here, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. You know, my mother, bless her heart, my mother, when I was a kid, my parents loved Santa Barbara. And if she's listening, she's turning red right now, I would predict, because she knows where this is going. There used to be there still is this giant tree in Santa Barbara. But back in my day, when I was a young boy, and not very good at school, a little bit lazy perhaps, a troublemaker, one could even say, my parents were apparently very, very worried about me. And so there was this tree in Santa Barbara, and my mom affectionately called it the homeless tree. Because under this tree were a number of vagabond-type persons. And, my mom, we would drive by the homeless tree. She would say, look, see that tree right there, Sam? You keep that up at school. That's where you're going to end up. You think I'm going to let you stay at home? Heck no. You're going to end up under this tree. And you know what else, Sam? We're going to come and visit you, and we'll bring you stuff once in a while, but you can enjoy living under that tree. So that's, by the way, it's nice to know that homelessness can have some value, some teaching value. That's it. The expectation was always that you're going to grow up and you're going to earn a living. I care what it is, but you're not going to live here forever. You know that guy that was running that that 13-year-old that was running for Congress in Georgia for the seat that was whose seat was that? Oh, Tom Price, right? Tom Price's seat in Georgia. He's now the new health Secretary of Health, and in the Trump cabinet. But so there. Whenever somebody leaves Congress early, they hold a special election, typically. And some seats are appointed, the vacancies filled. But there is a special election that's held, and it was a guy, John Ossoff. Now, interestingly enough, he does not live in the district. Only his parents do. No, he lives with his girlfriend outside of the district. Or maybe he lived with his parents. I don't know. What's more embarrassing if you're running for Congress in the South? Hi, I don't live in the district that I intend to represent. Or hello, I do live in the district, but with mom and dad. Some people have been calling him Pajama Boy. Have you heard this? Because he's a total wet noodle. And I'll tell you right now why he didn't secure 50% of the vote and win this thing outright. Because that's what he's going to have to do. There were, I think, 5 Republicans running against him. So, of course, they each did not get very much of the vote, but he did. Exactly. So now in June, there's going to be a big election. But I'll tell you why he was unsuccessful. It's pretty simple. The Democrats are running anti-Trump candidates and not candidates who are ideologically representative of the left or of any articulable, political ideology. Bernie Sanders ran as a leftist, as in my opinion, frankly, as a communist. But his rallies, people, he got votes. He got more votes than Hillary did. The point, exactly. And that was during the election. That was when Trump frenzy was, you know, was happening. I want to talk about this because what the Democrats are doing is they're running as anti-Trump and not as they don't have any feeling or thought or any kind of strategy behind it. It's nothing. It's very dangerous. I'll give you some great examples of this when we come back. All right, we got John Wolfe with the news next. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC, and talking here about the lost Democrats. You know, the Washington Post, by no means a friend of Donald Trump, is running. There's an article that they have that came out. Let's see, came out yesterday. Who are the Democrats? And it analyzes the race in Georgia that I was just talking about, where John Ossoff was the Democratic candidate who was trying to. It's a conservative district. Tom Price, when he became the Secretary of Health, he ends up vacating a seat. He's no longer congressman. They got to fill the seat. There's a special election, and the Democratic Party is desperate to rack up a win. Right, every seat in Congress. Remember how close the healthcare vote was? Remember that, how it came down to counting people? So there's a certain amount of logic here on the national level that they need bodies, right? They need votes. But then there's also sort of a strategic reason behind it that beyond just votes. It's look, what better way to talk trash on Trump as, hey, man, this guy, he's even in conservative districts, even in Republican districts that have been Republican for years, a Republican can't win because of the stain of the Trump presidency. That's the narrative that they want to advance on a national level. So at first Ron Estes, right, back earlier this month, he won 60% of the vote in Kansas. And everybody told us, right, all the talking heads said the Democrat was going to win. The Democrat was going to win. We'll show you how unhappy America is with Trump. And now John Ossoff failed to get 50% of the vote, so there's going to be a runoff. He's going to run against a Republican. And I think this race is very competitive. It's not likely he's going to win. But make no mistake, these are not local races. These are not, it's not about some little district in Georgia or a little district in Kansas. These are national campaigns. And by the way, did you see that? You know that the Democrats even brought out all sorts of people. Samuel Jackson even went to the district and he did ads and appearances with the candidate. One of the ads he ran, we have to channel the great vengeance and fury we have for this administration into votes at the ballot box. And that is exactly what I mean, right? This is, by the way, Samuel Jackson didn't come up with this. This is the big, you know, campaign strategist thinking, you know, how are we going to do this? But there's nothing in this that articulates a difference between the candidate and his opponent. They're making it an election about Trump. And I think trying to sink Trump and trying to, I mean, we're less than 100 days in here. Don't forget, I mean, in these states like Georgia, Trump won handily. You got to ask yourself, in that district where Trump won a majority of the votes, how many of those people have really left him? I understand that you, the Washington Post, or you, CNN, or you, Santa Monica Liberal, may never have liked Trump from day one. Fine, I get that. But you have got to come up with a better argument than no Trump. and let's show Trump how horrible he is to win these races. And it's actually bigger than just these individual races and these individual districts and running for Congress or whatnot. On a larger level, if the Democrats are going to move the needle in any meaningful way, they have to figure out who they are and what they stand for. And it absolutely must be more than just no more Trump. It has to be more than that. So this is an interesting development, and we're gonna see if it happens. We're gonna see how that happens. Because meanwhile, Trump is doing just fine. In fact, even the New York Times thinks so. Crazy enough. I'll tell you about that when we come back. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski here. So I can tell you why I know Trump is having some success. Remember Glenn Thrush writing for the New York Times? Today he wrote a piece, Bold, Unpredictable Foreign Policy Lifts Trump, but Has Risks. Now, I just want to remind you, Thrush is the guy who emailed Podesta. Remember during the Podesta email hack? He was the one that basically sent Podesta a preview version of the piece that he was going to write on him. And actually, in the email said, I have become a hack. I will send you the section that pertains to you for review, da da da. Okay, that's the Glenn Thrush, just so you remember. He was in the news a few months back. So he writes this piece that is actually, on balance, complimentary. Think about that. Now, the point here is that he goes through examples of instances where Trump has acted decisively. He actually talks about Mar-a-Lago and how and the implication is the meeting with President Xi from China, you know, at the same time firing the rockets. And he's the first, I think one of the first liberals that I have come across that is actually making the connection that he thinks it was orchestrated. Of course it was orchestrated. It was totally orchestrated. And here's what he's writing. Took a few moments, but Mr. Xi's eyes widened in surprise. This is as he was being told of the rockets being fired at Syria. And he asked his translator to repeat what was said. And apparently writes that, speaking of the Chinese president's reaction, this was exactly the response that Trump was hoping to elicit. Surprise, uncertainty, and a sense that, and listen to this, that the rational, predictable statecraft of President Barack Obama had given way to Mr. Trump's more assertive vision of American power. Now, of course, President Obama, he's calling him predictable, okay, which I don't think is flattering, but statecraft, you know. Now, the New York Times not calling anything that Trump is doing a statecraft. But he does talk about how he's throwing our enemies off their game. And calling Obama predictable is not too complimentary, right? See, this is, and this, I'm reading this because this is a diamond in the rough. I mean, most of what I read is still misses. People on the left are still missing the genesis of how Trump occurred, think that Trump was accidental, that it was a fluke, that it was just this thing that happened with no explanation other than, you know, racism, bigotry, extremism, Russia, right? That's the biggest urban legend of them all. So this little bit of awakening on the left it's going to be interesting to follow, and we'll see if it translates into a more coherent Democratic Party response to Trump. I personally doubt it. I doubt it, because I think that they're still fighting this guy fighting Trump tooth and nail, no matter what. You know who else you're going to fight tooth and nail? You're going to fight the insurance. If you get into a car accident, you're going to fight the insurance company tooth and nail, because they don't want to give an inch. Just like the liberal press on Trump, they don't want to give an inch. They're not going to pay you a dollar. You can come to them. You can reason with them. You can talk nicely to them. You can even beg. It's not going to happen, because if you don't have representation after a car accident or any injury, they won't deal with you. I promise you that. The only way to get what you deserve, you've got to fight back, and you've got to get the right lawyer in your corner. And that guy is Sweet James Bergner, the lawyer that we trust here on the program to get the job done for you. Call him, 800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or you can visit his website, sweetjames.com. Call him. All right, we're back right after this.
Talk Radio. 790.
KABC.
Ah! I feel good. I knew that I would.
Sam Rogowski here. Feeling good.
I knew that I would.
I'll tell you this. There are... the reason I know that the left is lost is that there's all this attention. Well, they're searching for a new standard bearer. There are actually some people that think that Hillary could run again. They really are. And then did you see that? Was it Vanity Fair? Who did the spread on Chelsea Clinton where they glammed her up? Variety did it. Yeah, they glammed up Chelsea Clinton. Like Chelsea Clinton has any appeal. Like, she's not going to save the Democratic Party. Who else have they moved to? Who else have they got? Maxine Waters. Now, if you live in L.A. or anywhere, basically, around this area. You know Maxine Waters because she's been around since the beginning of time. And she's a nut, okay? A total nut job. But there's these little, if you haven't heard this, there's these little rumblings with our friends on the left about, well, she's become kind of this icon in the new Democratic Party, whatever that means. There was Salon magazine did a video series, 5 Reasons Maxine Waters Should Be Our Next President. Their top reason is that she fights for minorities. Also, she's experienced. But there was a more interesting piece that was in Elle magazine. Now, normally I do not read Elle magazine, but I found this one. Somebody sent this to me because a few days ago, a guy named Eric Thomas did a profile on Maxine Waters and called her the millennial's political rock star. This is the same millennials where 25% of them are living at home and are unemployed. Okay. Well, of course, right. Of course, you love a socialist if you're unemployed. There's some great Maxine Waters clips, some great quotes of hers. Where's one of them? You know the socialism? Do we have that socialism? She's talking about the oil industry here and regulating the oil industry. Have a listen.
What guarantees are you going to give this liberal about how that will reduce the cost of gasoline at the pump if we let you drill where you say you want to drill? And guess what this liberal would be all about? This liberal will be all about socializing, would be about basically taking over. And the government running all of your companies.
maybe this is what they need, right? This is what maybe if the left is loving Maxine Waters, they got to just go right down to socializing. That's it. I mean, guess what this liberal would be all about? This liberal would be about socializing. And then she realizes that that word is kind of a bad word. You know, we don't, after all, America is a country built on capitalism. So you, the typical, by the way, Democrat moment, they realize that that you can't really call their ideology what it is. And so you gotta quickly repackage it, call it something else. And this, by the way, I'm out of time. There's so much to cover here on Maxine Waters. But she's the one, right? She's the one holding the tax rallies, the anti-Trump rallies, and getting a lot of attention for it. But it's her brand of liberalism will never sell. It'll never sell on a national level. It won't win a presidency. It's not something that America, the broader country, is willing to buy. No way, no how. So the Democrats, I'm afraid, have to go back to the drawing board. Maxine Waters is not going to work, sorry to say. Well, sorry, not sorry, I should say. All right, we'll be back tomorrow, 7 p.m. Looking forward to it. Have a great Thursday. Tomorrow's Friday. We made it, almost there. All right, Sam Rejofsky, back tomorrow. See you then.
Talk Radio 790.
KABC.